Hi, welcome back to the Georgia Show. I'm Bill Quinn. Todd Wood is still traveling today. He is on his way back to the United States. We'll be back for our next show. We wish him well, and we can't wait to hear the remainder of the things that he has to report from his trip to Lebanon and his stay in Beirut. We thank you for joining tonight. As always, we want to thank everyone for the support they've shown, both in terms of contributing information that we build upon for this show and for the Georgia Record, and also for those that have signed up for our no ad subscriptions. That's very important to us. And if you haven't yet done so, if you have the means, we'd ask that you consider signing up for our no ad subscription. You'll find it on the front page of any of our digital properties all across the U.S. Here in Georgia, just go to the Georgia Record, georgiarecord.com. And right there on the side, you'll see the Georgia Record no ad subscriptions. It's $9 a month or $100 a year, and it eliminates the ads so that you can more quickly get to what you want to see, which is the content, the articles, and all the coverage that we provide for the folks all across Georgia. So we thank you for that. And if you've already signed up, again, we appreciate the support, and it is helping us do the best job we possibly can to bring you the most complete news and usually news that other people are not bringing you. So before we get going, I'm going to bring in an ad from one of our financial sponsors, David Cross.
This is a special report.
Knowing how to invest your money is harder than ever before. Dealing with stock market volatility, record debt, and terrorist attacks requires new thinking. At U.S. Asset Management, we can help you see the world more clearly so that you can move beyond the chaos and invest with confidence. Call us, visit us online, or drop by our office. U.S. Asset Management, helping you make better decisions with your money.
All right, we've got a number of things to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about some additional information that's coming out showing just how much has been covered up and hidden from the U.S. populace for how many years, we don't know. But as weeks and days go by, Tulsi Gabbard and others continue to bring out evidence that says many, many things have been covered up, and they continue to find hints and documents and information that will be brought to us so we can more fully understand what's happened in these past decades. We'll start with a video from the cabinet meeting held just this week, and you hear Tulsi begin to talk about some of the things that they've found and some of the odd places they've found them. Here we go.
Also found many bags of information. I think they call them burn bags. They're supposed to be burned, and they didn't get burned, having to do with how corrupt the 2020 election was. And when will that all come out?
Mr. President, I will be the first to brief you once we have that information collected. But you're right, we are finding documents literally tucked away in the back of safes in random offices, in these bags and in other areas, which again speaks to the intent of those who are trying to hide the truth from the American people and trying to cover up the politicization that was led by people like John Brennan and James Clapper and others that have caused really immeasurable harm to the American people and to our country.
Thank you. We look forward to hearing it. The public looks forward. Thank you very much.
The public does indeed look forward to hearing this. You'll recall that Ana Paulina Luna in the past couple of weeks has talked also about finding these burn bags and information in odd places. She described finding a burn bag in the corner of a skiff, a secure compartmentalized information facility, meaning a room that is set apart that cannot be eavesdropped on using electronic means. And so what an odd place to leave a burn bag. But it, again, is one of those places that is not easy to get into that room. And so would make sense if you're going to try to hide something, you hide it in some place that is not easy to access. We're going to hear more about this, I am sure. We're going to talk later in the broadcast about some other things where we're getting foreshadowed information that will come out probably quite shortly that in some ways may be quite surprising, quite devastating, but is likely very important for us to understand. So we'll echo again the president's thoughts. The public is looking forward to getting this information. We talked in the last couple of weeks about the work going on in Washington, D.C., and the president's goals to clean up that city, make it safe again, make it beautiful again. And in so doing, they have taken essentially control of the police force and in many ways really taken control of management of Washington, D.C. itself. It seems that they've likely circumvented the improper management that has been used up to now by people like the mayor, the mayor's office, the administrations, and so forth. The talk now is where else might this kind of work be needed? And of course, one of the places in the country that has been very concerning for now a number of years is Chicago, Chicago, Illinois. Chicago, as many know, has been very unsafe to the point of sometimes in the course of a weekend, hundreds of people might be shot and many of those killed by violence in that city. For what reason? Well, for robberies and hate crimes and other things. But clearly, if they can clean up Washington, as we had said a couple of weeks ago, as other people in other cities begin to see the success that we're going to talk more about in going on in Washington, they may wish to see these same things done in their cities as well, even though the people that run those cities, or in fact, the people that run the states, may not wish that to happen. They don't want to be shown to have allowed folks and safety and the populace to be put at risk because of their inaction. And J.B. Pritzker seems to be one of those that might be in the target here as we go forward. J.B. Pritzker is governor of Illinois, and as we've discussed, Chicago has long been one of those areas where safety seems to have been an afterthought, not a priority for that city. Trump, in the last few days, had some interesting comments regarding Chicago and Pritzker. Let's hear what he had to say.
For Pritzker, if he'd call me up and say, I have a problem, can you help me fix it? I would be so happy to do it. I don't love, not that I don't have the right to do anything I want to do. I'm the president of the United States. If I think our country's in danger, and it is in danger in these cities, I can do it. No problem going in and solving, you know, his difficulties. But it would be nice if they'd call and they'd say, would you do it?
Well, why would he not call and say, could we get some help? Well, it'd be because it would show that he and the folks running Chicago, and in fact, in some ways running the state, have not been doing perhaps their job. So in a very interesting video interview, Pritzker had some choice words to share, but then the cameraman wisely pans to a particular building in Chicago and perhaps to put a poignant cap on Pritzker's comments. Let's listen.
About the progress that we're making. I know that I live rent-free in the president's head, and I wish he would spend some time in Chicago so that he could see what a lovely city we have.
Governor, quick follow-up. What do you do if the National Guard is activated and comes here?
Well, it appears that Trump may have actually spent some time in Chicago, and there's one of his buildings overlooking these comments from Pritzker. In the past couple of months, we've done some research on the USAID scandal. And one of the things that we found was that a number of people in Pritzker's family and associated with Pritzker seem to be part of these NGOs that may have been receiving money from USAID. And this was brought out in a couple of things. Let's take a look here. Let's see if we can pull this up. Let's take a look. Bear with me for a moment. Here's a list of many of the recipients, the NGOs receiving money from USAID. And look at how many seem to be associated with Pritzker. In fact, there seems to be about 68 NGOs where the leaders or members of the board or, in fact, executives have some connection, if not a direct family connection, then some connection to Pritzker and his family. That is obviously troubling from certainly from a money standpoint. Now, what about the condition of Chicago itself? Well, if we go back and we look at what has been said about Chicago in previous years, we'll find some real concerning trends. Here's something that Trump said to back up his comments on video. A really deadly weekend in Chicago. 6 dead, 27 hurt in crime sprees all over the city. A panic-stricken Governor Pritzker says the crime is under control when, in fact, it is just the opposite. He's an incompetent governor who should call me for help. Mayor Johnson is no better. Make Chicago great again. Well, what are the facts behind the safety in Chicago? Well, in some cases, some may have forgotten just how bad this has been and for how long. This is an article that was written in Forbes back in 2016 and updated in 2021. And it compares the murders, the homicides in Chicago, and the level of those murders compared to wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. So literally, more people were dying in Chicago than were dying in these international conflicts. How many? Well, here's an infographic that shows it. So at the top, you can see those killed in Iraq, and God bless their souls, and those killed in Afghanistan. Down at the bottom, you see Chicago that is actually in the same time frame greater than the sum of those two conflicts. So imagine how bad this must be for folks to be this out of control. So we do expect that we will see some very interesting doings from Trump and from his admin as we continue to see, hopefully, progress with regard to the safety and security of Chicago. And do we expect that this will be taken on to other cities? Have a funny feeling it might be. But again, it's probably because of the city's residents looking at what's happening and saying, you know what? I would like my town, my neighborhood, my home, my family to be in greater safety than they are today. So if this is what we have to go through, perhaps so be it. All right. Another thing that has come out is additional announcements from, and hints, if you will, from RFK. Now, we've heard in previous months that RFK would be concentrating on several things. One, crops, pesticides, chemicals, additives, and of course, vaccines and so forth. But in addition, he's concentrating very specifically on autism. And he had foretold back before the actual election that he believed that in a number of months that they could come to a certain set of conclusions with regard to what might be causing this astronomical increase in the rate of autism, especially in young people, and begin to determine what's causing it. And of course, if you can determine what causes something, you can likely determine what measures could be taken to prevent it from continuing to increase and perhaps turn it around. Let's hear his comments in the cabinet meeting this week.
Autism, if I could just, I don't want to go too long because we have a lot of people, but the autism is such a tremendous horror show, what's happening in our country and some other countries, but mostly our country. How are you doing on that?
We are doing very well. We will have announcements as promised in September. We're finding certain interventions now that are clearly, almost certainly causing autism. And we're going to be able to address those in September.
It's such a big day. I'm looking forward to that day because there's something wrong when you see the kind of numbers that you have today versus 20 years ago. And those numbers, what are those numbers, Bob?
Well, in 1970, the biggest epidemiological study in history was done in Wisconsin. They looked at 900,000 children, and they were looking for autism. They knew what it looked like, and they were very, very precise about it, and they found an incident rate of 0.7, in other words, less than one per every 10,000 children. Today, our most recent numbers are one in every 31 kids. It's probably actually much worse than that, because California, which has the best collection system, is reporting one out of every 19 children, American children, as autism, one in every 12.5 boys. So it's gone from one, less than one in 10,000 in 1970 to one in 12.5 boys today.
Even those numbers, so there has to be something artificially causing this, meaning a drug or something. And I know you're looking very strongly at different things, and I hope you can come out with that as soon as possible.
We will.
So one in 10,000, and now it's one in 31 or 34 or 12 if it's a boy. Can you imagine that? One in 12, that's for a boy.
On every 12.5 boys.
It's not even believable that that could be. And that was one in 10,000 not so long ago. I've been hearing these numbers, that, and they get worse and worse every year. There's got to be something. I think there's nothing, including favored nations and everything else, there's nothing that can be, if you can find out the reason that that's happening. And I know we're gonna do some things. I think we maybe know the reason, and I look forward to that press conference, to be with you in that press conference. That's going to be a great thing. Thank you, Bob. You're doing a great job.
So a couple things. One, he talks about the fact that they will be able to make announcements in September regarding certain, what he calls, interventions. What might that mean? Well, we'll see. But it sounds like they are beginning to really target in on what may be the underlying cause. The numbers are absolutely astounding. Let's take a look at what he just described. This is a chart that dates back to the early 70s. And you can see that 1 in 10,000 number that was true back in those years. And the fact that this chart is only a couple of years old now, and it topped out at 1 in 36, and he is now claiming that it's up to 1 in about 30 and 1 in 12.5 among boys. What a horrific growth that we've seen in this. And it just underscores the need for this to be determined, find the cause, find the solution to stop this. And so many thousands of children will be saved if we can find out what's causing this, from the devastating effects of the various conditions that occur along the autism spectrum. So we will continue to watch carefully and report on this. But understand just how important this is. This is likely something that affects, if not your family, then your friends' families or others in your extended family. And hopefully the solutions to this will be determined, and that relief will reach many thousands of families across the U.S. All right, let's before we go on to talking about our nation's capital, since we're on health, let's hear from the Wellness Company, who have put together a number of solutions for folks to maintain and guard their health and care for themselves should there be a problem that needs to be dealt with. Let's hear from the Wellness Company.
Well, in the case of hydroxychloroquine and ivermectin, these are two medications that have been FDA approved for use in humans for decades. Mm-hmm. They are very, very inexpensive. Interestingly, available over the counter in almost every other country other than the U.S. and Canada. Yeah. You can just walk into a pharmacy and buy them like we buy Tylenol in much of the world, because they're that safe. And we've known for decades that ivermectin has very strong antiviral properties. It has anti-inflammatory properties. And both ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine are what we call zinc ionophores. They help to move zinc from the bloodstream into the cell, which is where it needs to be in order to fight off a virus. So lots of application for these. And we have every reason to believe that those drugs also will likely have some efficacy against H5N1 or a number of other respiratory viruses that we may meet down the road.
All right, welcome back. So next we're going to talk about winning in Washington. And there have been a number of changes since the president announced that they were going to take control of the police force in the Capitol and likely take over much of the management of the city in order to bring back safety and bring back beauty, as he calls it, to the Washington city area. So we heard a lot about what was going to happen. We had through mainstream media, you heard a lot of pushback, which everybody anticipated. They're going to try to tell you that everything that Trump is doing is the wrong thing for the wrong reasons, unneeded, unnecessary. And oh, by the way, he's being a dictator, which is, of course, not true. But isn't it interesting that the folks that live there, in many cases, can report bad experiences, things that have happened to them or their families that now they feel much more comfortable about. In fact, one of the White House press corps, not a member of the administration, but a member of an independent member of the press, came forward during one of the Oval Office meetings and spoke out. Let's hear what that exchange went like.
Mentioned, you know, about crime, because we have a young lady here, Iris, of Epoch Times. You're Iris, aren't you, huh? And I heard you were very savagely mugged in the city, and I'm not going to let that happen under this administration. And that was last year. And would you like to mention what happened?
Of course. So first of all, thank you, Mr. President.
You want to listen to this?
For having me here to share my story to the room and to the broader public. My name is Iris Talman, White House correspondent for NTD, the sister media of the Epoch Times. So more than 2 years ago, it was a Saturday morning in broad daylight. Mm. I was on my way to work, and a young man with a black ski mask pointed a gun at my face and threatened me to hand over my phone, my wallet, my laptop, and everything else. And when I refused, he used the butt of his handgun to strike me across the face, the cheek, or what some people call pistol whip me, before running away. And that has deeply traumatized myself and my family. Ever since, I've never dared to walk in the street of DC at night ever, and my family was extremely worried. So, Mr. President, thank you so much for what you're doing right
now. Thank you, for being honest.
Such incidents involved not just me, but also my family. If he had shot me, I could have died right there in the middle of nowhere without my family's or my friends knowing at the age of back then, I think 23.
Right.
Just starting my career here in DC without even starting a family. But now I'm very blessed to have this opportunity.
So you had a gun pointed at your head, and you probably figured that he's going to pull the trigger, because these are animals that don't know what the hell. They couldn't care less. The pulling the trigger to him is a very minor event, and I'm sure he's done it before. So how did you, and you did refuse to give it, which would probably, maybe somebody would say that was not the right decision, right? But you refused, but I understand that. So and then he hit you real hard.
Yes.
It's really amazing that you weren't shot, though.
I'm very blessed, and that's why having this opportunity to stand here to share my story today, one, I'm very grateful for God for allowing me to still survive to this day, but also to Mr. President. Thank you for now making D.C. safer.
Thank you very much.
For us, for our families, for my parents, on my behalf of my parents, and now my baby on the way. Thank you so much.
So what a nice story. And you may recall that on our last broadcast, our last couple broadcasts, we showed a video from Benny Johnson, one of the well-known reporters in Washington, speaking about his own experience and the fact that he has seen and his family has seen violence in their neighborhood, and they are looking forward and are beginning to see changes based on what's being done in Washington. In addition, Brian Glenn, a friend of Marjorie Taylor Greene and also a member of the White House press corps, reported something very similar on the day that they announced these changes to the way that the police force and the city of Washington would be run. So clearly there is a, you know, there is a pushback from mainstream media trying to vilify Trump over much of this. But the people that live there seem to be sending a very clear message that they like this, they appreciate it, and where they can, they are seeing differences already in the way that this is being managed. So here's some comments that Steve Miller also had with regard to the, you know, the changes going on in Washington, D.C.
Their place. Steve Miller, please say a few words.
Thank you, sir. So just to, first of all, follow up on what the vice president said. No police officer working in the city can remember a time in their lives when there has been no murders. You can work at the police department for 20 years, 30 years, your whole life. We've checked the records. No one can even find a record of being murder-free for as long as we've been murder-free under President Trump's leadership. Additionally, and the president spoke about this before, we've uncovered, in the process of uncovering, a massive scandal in Washington, D.C., with the doctoring of crime stats. And the Department of Justice, under the Attorney General, is leading the effort to uncover this. But when we ultimately share the results, it will stun you. The extent to which, even though D.C. had the worst crime in America, honestly measured, it dramatically understated how bad it was. There's even accusations that murders and homicides were reported as accidents instead of murders. I mean, this is how severe the manipulation of the crime data has been in this city. And it will all be uncovered and it will all be brought to light. You know, I've had a chance to spend some time, as is everyone here, with the police officers in the city. Members of the public are going up to them and thanking them, just overflowing with gratitude, because for the first time in their lives, they can use the parks, they can walk on the streets. You have people who can walk freely at night without having to worry about being robbed or mugged. They're wearing their watches again. They're wearing jewelry again. They're carrying purses again. People had changed their whole lives in this city for fear of being murdered, mugged, and carjacked. It is a literal statement that President Trump has freed 700,000 people in this city who were living under the rule of criminals and thugs. And the last thing I'll say is that under the efforts of Terry, to my left and many here, what they found also is that the street criminals here in Washington, D.C. were doing business directly with the transnational criminal cartels, the foreign terrorist organizations. So not only was the city being run by these criminal thugs, but they were working with some of the most dangerous terrorist organizations on the planet to traffic weapons and drugs into this city. And what we are uncovering every day is shocking to us. And we look forward to sharing all the results with you. But President Trump, your leadership has uncovered some of the great public safety scandals of our life. And now, because of you, people are safe and free for the first time ever in this city.
Thank you very much, Steve. You know, in Los Angeles.
Fascinating feedback from Steve Miller. Think carefully about what you just heard from Mr. Miller. One was Washington, D.C. was the most dangerous city in the country. Now, go back to just a few minutes ago, when we showed you crime stats from Chicago that said that more people had been killed in Chicago than had been killed in the time frame in the Afghan and Iraq conflicts. Imagine how bad Washington, D.C. must have been and the dramatic change that's now going on. You also heard him say that the police could not find a record showing the longest period of time that the city had gone without a murder, without murders in history. And so imagine the change that's going on now. Now, some people assume that this means they've got people walking around the streets doing, you know, looking like stormtroopers and intimidating folks on the street. But the feedback that we're hearing is nothing like that. The feedback is that they are treating people that are normal residents and citizens as just folks that they're watching out for, and in some cases are actually doing other services to help accomplish the other parts of Trump's goal for Washington, D.C., which was to get the city looking beautiful again. Let's see one example of this that we found on Twitter today. In some cases, the National Guard is participating in other activities to actually clean up the city. And in some cases, that means literally picking up the trash. And so here's some video of them doing exactly that. Now, God bless them. We know that these are trained military folks. But at the end of the day, if the work needs to be done, apparently they're willing to do it and help make the city look beautiful again, as it should. And that's the feedback that we're getting. We will look for other videos like this, but you can begin to see and hear in the tone and the statements by Ms. Tao earlier, the reporter that talked about her being able to be safe again in the city, and the actions of the National Guard as they work through the city, that this is having a very, very positive effect. We're going to continue to watch this and watch for signals that the same kinds of things, whether they have to include National Guard or not, perhaps, but the same dynamics, the same priorities can be in play for other cities like Chicago and perhaps beyond. For those that said, well, gosh, who is this person that was in this meeting with Trump? Is she really a reporter? And we looked it up, and indeed, she is a White House correspondent for one of the news agencies, NTD, I believe. And here's a couple of posts that she's made on other news. And so she's a bona fide reporter, just like the rest. And so we are glad to hear her positive story as to what's happened. So with that in mind, sometimes it takes strong action to get things under control. Something that's happened in the last 24 hours is the administration has begun taking control of Washington's Union Station. Now, you'll recall that earlier in the year, Trump had, at Trump's request, the head of Amtrak had stepped down to do something else. And now the Amtrak organization has been in charge of Union Station as one of its largest rail hubs. It appears now like this is going to be taken on by the Trump administration to ensure that this too remains safe. Now, I've traveled through Union Station. I've not personally had a problem, but there have been at times a feeling of unease because of some of the people that might be hanging around either inside or outside the station itself. And so, like many areas of Washington, sometimes you wouldn't feel fully safe going through. Here is a lady that posted a TikTok video, I believe, just today, talking about her experience going through Union Station and what she can already see based on these measures being taken.
Union Station, as you can see behind me. Yes, 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 yes. And I walked through Union Station. It was different. See, I'm from D.C. I live here. So I can tell you, I can be honest, it's cleaner looking, it's nicer looking. You still have some people asking for money, but they're like only two or three, and they're like right by the escalators. They're not inside. They're not people like zombies on the inside. I was able to take an actual walk around the circle without smelling weird stuff. It's nice. I spoke to some of the military people. They were so nice. I said, I'm glad you're here. They were like, thank you. I even spoke to the U.S. Marshals up in Maryland. They were sweet, too. They had no attitude, even though they were busy. Like, he was busy, and he still spoke to me so nicely. So, like, literally, thumbs up, Trump. Get him.
Well, and we continue to hear more and more feedback like that. So we'll continue to report it as we get it. Before we bring in our first guest, we're going to take a little break and hear from our friends at MyPillow. They've got some amazing deals going on. And so let's see if these play out for you guys and if you'd like to take advantage of them. Here we go.
I'm excited to announce that we're having a huge sale on Overstock and brand new products. For example, MyPillow Percale bed sheets, every color, every style, every size, only $29.88. Arprakel bed sheets are breathable, cool, and crisp, and they're perfect for spring and summer. And check out Rev 7, the next generation of energy drinks. It tastes great, and it gives you energy all day with no jitters and no crashes. Best of all, it's actually good for you. And for a limited time, try our three-pack absolutely free. So go to MyPillow.com or call the number on your screen. Use your promo code to save 20% on our Rev 7 12-packs or try our introductory three-pack absolutely free. And our Prakel bed sheets, all sizes, only $29.88. Twin size, full size, queen size, king sizes, all $29.88. Inventory is extremely limited at this price, so order now.
Okay, welcome back. So meanwhile, after we saw what happens or what's happening in Washington and what may be starting to happen to Chicago, meanwhile, back in Georgia, we've had our own drama today. Earlier today, there was a hearing, an emergency hearing at that, that was called by the Fulton County Court in order to potentially consider contempt proceedings against the Fulton County Commission for failing to comply with a previous court order. We're lucky enough to have Jason Frazier with us, and we're going to bring him in now. Jason, how are you, my friend?
I'm good. How are you?
I am good. We're running solo today. Todd is still on his way back from Beirut, so it's the Jason and Bill show for the time being.
All right.
So you had quite an experience today. I don't want to steal any of your thunder. I'll just kind of set this up so we make sure they have a good ground setting on what happened. So there was a previous court order for the Fulton County Commission to, in fact, confirm you and Julie Adams as members of the Fulton County Board of Elections. You'd been nominated, what, almost a month ago? Is that right?
It's been a couple of months now. Yeah.
And unfortunately, the Fulton County Commission, as they did last time, has been resistant to specifically your nomination, but really both of them. So tell us about what happened today. And if you can, a bit of the order as it was issued, please.
Yeah, Bill, it was a packed house today, to say the least. I mean, it's gone from this is our third hearing. First hearing, there were, you know, it was me and five friends and a couple other folks. And then that probably doubled on the second one. And today it was completely full. So a lot of folks there, a lot of reporters, a lot of folks on our side and a few on their side. But essentially what came down is the judge listened to arguments from both sides. And, you know, in my humble opinion, it seemed like the judge had heard their story enough times by now. I hear their attorney is a very good attorney at what he does. But, I mean, you can only do so much with this case. I mean, the law says shall. Precedent is there. He even brought up the case from earlier this year where Julie Adams was required to certify an election, even though she didn't have full data to analyze that election and make sure that it was true and accurate as the law says. But the judge said she shall certify, and that shall requires her to certify, just like the shall in this particular case says they shall appoint said nominees. However, you know, the Democrats sued Julie, but now the Democrats are saying shall. Well, maybe shall doesn't mean that this time. So it's, you know, I've got to be careful what I say because rumor has it there's probably going to be an appeal coming.
Understand. So if you can, let me go through a couple of my own observations, and then you can, if you hear something that I cover that you think is a bit different, then please offer that if you can. Sure. And I do want to make sure that that you stay within the guidelines that have been recommended for you, knowing that this thing is still potentially live. So as the proceedings began, the plaintiff, in this case, the plaintiff is the Fulton County GOP, supported by a couple of attorneys. And specifically, they noted, the gentleman from on the plaintiff side, noted that the court had previously ordered the Fulton County Commission to appoint You too. They noted, and you called it out a moment ago, the law that underscores this says once the nomination is produced by the executive officer of the Fulton County GOP, the county commission shall, and in this case, shall is taken to be synonymous with must, appoint their nominees. Well, the third point they came up with was, in addition, some of these folks have almost unbelievably gone on social media and said, even though I'm being ordered by the court to do this, I won't. I won't.
I wouldn't want to be their attorney. We'll put it that way.
Yes, yes. And which is astounding to me because typically judges and courts are very unhappy. I'll use that word because we're on a family channel. To have anybody call their ruling, their decisions into question, and to literally publicly issue a video in which one or more, I think there were three members perhaps that made very similar statements and simply said, I'm not going to do it. I don't care if the court ordered it or not. That seems remarkable to the nth degree to me. And the plaintiff's attorney did call that out. Now, the defense seemed to focus on several points, one of which being the commissioners really only have one tool to use in terms of what their work entails. They only have their vote. Okay, fine. They only have their vote. And so there's no other way that they that is prescribed for them to make decisions. They also said, which seemed on its face to be surprising, they claimed, the defense counsel claimed, that the court cannot compel an individual to take specific action. Now, you mentioned a few minutes ago that a very similar circumstance came up with Julie Adams last year, in which she called out the fact that during certification of an election, some information, some data that she expected to receive was not made available. And she demanded that that information be made available, if I'm stating this correctly. They neglected or refused or simply didn't. And so she said, well, I'm not going to certify. I can't certify realistically if I don't have the proper information. Same thing happened, or very similar thing. Fulton County Commission took the situation to court. And in fact, Ms. Adams was ordered by the court to certify the election. So it would seem that in that case, the court could compel individual action, but now folks on that side are claiming the court cannot compel individual action. Have I got those points pretty close?
Absolutely. And it just seems very surprising that these board of commissioners would be as bold as they are. I mean, you mentioned a minute ago that three of the commissioners went on social media. Actually, two of them went on social media just this morning at 9 o'clock on the steps of the courthouse and said how, you know, the court could not compel them to vote in a certain way. The other member, Marvin Arrington Jr., he was actually campaigning for donations to his campaign by stating that he wasn't going to vote to affirm Julie and I. So, I mean, that does not seem wise, in my opinion. Granted, I'm not an attorney, but I wouldn't want to represent somebody that is that boldly defying the judge's order. I mean, agree or disagree, I wouldn't think that is a wise way to go about it.
It doesn't. It certainly doesn't seem like it. So the hearing was at what it began at 10 o'clock this morning, lasted a little over an hour. The judge made some final comments and then adjourned court. And then around 2 o'clock or so, the word began to spread that, in fact, an order had been brought down. And we found out within just a few minutes what that order entailed. So let's bring this up. And essentially, this is I suppose some people are saying that in positioning this is a win. And in some ways, I think it is. In other ways, it does seem to leave some questions open. So I'll let you take, if you're able to, I'll let you take us through this. But essentially, the beginning is the judge did find for the plaintiffs overall in his ruling. And then he did certain actions. Do you want to take us through the actions, Jason?
Yeah, I mean, essentially, the judge delayed the fine until, I believe it's Friday. Correct me if I'm wrong. It's been a busy day. But
I think that's right.
My theory on that, and I haven't spoken to a lot of folks on this. Again, it's been a busy day. But I believe the board, if they chose to, could have put an emergency meeting together and given enough notice to have a hearing or a meeting on Friday. That's my guess. I'm not sure. Every organization has different timing on when how much notice they have to give before they could have a meeting. So I would speculate that the judge, they agreed that, hey, we could have a meeting by Friday. So that's the first opportunity that they could approve Julie and I. So we'll just have the fine start then. So that's kind of my guess on why he delayed it a couple of days.
I see.
But then, you know, it's going to be $10,000 a day, and that is being paid by the board. So it's not on the individual members. And as a Fulton County taxpayer, I mean, let's be honest, I'm paying for it, and so is everybody else that lives in Fulton County. So it is a win. It definitely shows that there is a problem. It's bringing attention to the issue. As far as will they comply, I mean, your guess is as good as mine. I believe they are going to appeal, as their attorney alluded to. They are working on an appeal. So I'm not sure how that works as far as when they file the appeal. Can they delay this $10,000 a day fine? Does it accrue? There's still a lot of questions that I've got right now. But either way, a ruling saying there is a problem, and that's not a small amount. So hopefully that will compel them to do something. And if not, the folks in their districts may not be happy with that.
Yeah. So let me just enumerate the key points in the ruling. And he did say, I did not post the entire ruling because it's going to be too small for people to read, but he did have some choice words indicating that he was not pleased with the fact that the commission seemed to be making this a convoluted situation and set of actions or inactions in this case. And so he did impose a $10,000 per day fine to be paid daily by the Fulton County Commission, the board. And so that in and of itself has some challenges to it. Somebody's got to, I guess, be cutting checks and so forth each day to be compliant with this. And that is to continue until such time as the commission shall act to appoint the nominees of the Republican Party's executive officer as required by the local legislation creating the Fulton County BOE. And this, again, this fine is to be paid daily. So until they act, until they solve this problem and get you guys appointed, this ostensibly would continue. Second, the judge enumerated that he found them guilty of what's called civil contempt, but in fact had declined to find the defendants individually guilty of criminal contempt, and seemed to signify something about them not doing this directly in front of the court. I kind of question that, in that even with a traffic citation, if you don't show up to court and do what the court tells you to do, you'll find yourself facing a bench warrant in most cases. And these guys seem to have done much more, in my own opinion, than simply neglecting to follow up on a traffic ticket, you know, to state they're not going to follow the directions of the court to a public audience. Seems to be
plenty of opportunities.
Seems to be much more aggressive to me, my opinion. And then lastly, the court did say that they would award attorney's fees to the plaintiffs, but would not determine the amount of those fees until further submissions or through stipulations made by the parties. And so that seemed to be we'll get to this, but we need more information once we understand what the attorney's fees actually are and what's being asked for.
Yeah, that last item is definitely a big win for us. I mean, the RNC is footing the bill for this, but still there's a limit to how many dollars there are. And if they can come out not burning a hole in their pocket and redeploy those assets to other lawsuits, that's a big win for us for sure.
Yeah, that's very interesting. I feel like I'd like to ask a question about the RNC's involvement in this. Would that be okay?
Sure, we can try it.
So how was it that the RNC became involved in this particular case? Did they come to you? Did you reach members of the RNC? How was it that they came together on this?
Yeah, from my standpoint, the Fulton County GOP reached out to our state chair, Josh McCoon, and then he reached out to the RNC. And part of the reason, in my opinion, that the RNC took this case, unlike that, they didn't take it 2 years ago when essentially the same thing happened. They denied me 2 years ago, and that's why Julie Adams is on the board. Mm-hmm. But they picked it up this time because they've been getting pressure from folks in other states that if Fulton County is allowed to continue to do this and not only pick the Democrat board members, but essentially they get to pick the Republican board members, then people are afraid that this could happen in their states. So it's starting to become a national issue very quickly. So RNC needed to step in, or somebody needed to step in, to make sure that that we start following the law here in Fulton County.
So the other thing, we haven't really addressed it in this discussion, but the other factor here too is different counties have subtly different laws, don't they?
They sure do.
And it's notable that in the past, I believe 2 years, maybe three, two or three other counties have encountered issues with getting their county commission to, in fact, appoint the nominee made and brought forward by the local county GOP. In those cases, efforts have been made to correct whatever the issue was, but ultimately have not been successful in at least, I believe, three cases. So perhaps getting this issue highlighted and in front of proper authority might help solve this case for you and Julie Adams, but also perhaps prevent a similar occurrence in the future. Is that a fair statement?
That's exactly how I look at it. I mean, the judge even mentioned today that Fulton County is the only county he's aware of that has a law on the books the way they do, that essentially it's worded a little different, but essentially the Democrats pick two members, the Republicans pick two members, and the chair is appointed by the Board of Commissioners. Every other county, you know, there are several different methods in different counties. And in my opinion, it should be one standardized process statewide, or maybe in small counties, possibly you don't have five members because there are some really small counties out there. But mm-hmm. essentially, it should be balanced and similarly handled statewide, in my opinion, as well as I'll be perfectly honest. I don't think, based on my experience, the Board of Commissioners should even have a vote. It should just be put through. And that would alleviate every bit of this.
Yep. Yep. So one of the things that some folks have brought forward is the fact that many elections, it's certainly federal elections, and of course, elections for our state level officers, such as governor, lieutenant governor, so forth, require the summation, the aggregation of voting all across the state. And so it would seem wise to have similar to, you could make the argument, identical requirements in all counties, especially in a state like Georgia, which has 159 counties. It would seem to create the potential for some level of chaos if you've got different rules in different counties. And so many are hoping that this and other instances like it could pave the way for a more consistent way of doing this. That kind of assures you have a set of guidelines that can be complied with all across the state, and then you end up hopefully with a less chaotic result at the end of an election.
Yeah, that's exactly how I see it. I mean, you shouldn't have every county required to go through court to set precedent, to decide exactly what the interpretation is on their particular law. You know, make it standardized across the board. That way, there's no question. If you're qualified, if you're a registered elector in that county, you know, put in a couple other qualifications in there that you're of age, that you can be registered to vote there. maybe you've been a registrant for a year or something like that, you know, put some qualifications in there. But if you meet those qualifications and the party is fine with you being on that board, there shouldn't be political games that, that happen by somebody else, whether it be by the Board of Commissioners that might be, you know, majority Republican in one county, majority Democrat in another county. Nobody should be able to play these games. It should be straightforward so we can get down to business.
That seems so reasonable to actually hear someone say that.
Reasonable. We're in Georgia.
Yep, you know it, brother. Okay, any other points that you want to make? And I would like you to let folks know where to watch what you're bringing out, because you have a tendency to bring out very valuable information, whether it's on this instance with Fulton County or if it's got greater, more broad knowledge across what's going on with our elections or some other subject online. So offer what you can about what comes next, things that you that folks need to keep their eyes on, and then how they can watch what you're bringing out, please.
Yeah, I mean, folks can follow me on X at Jason Frazier USA. And I regularly post things on there about issues in the voter rolls. Like there's somebody named Unknown Unknown. There's several people with missing as their last name or first name. I mean, just a lot of kind of ridiculous errors, if you will, in the voter rolls that should not be there. So I like when the Secretary of State claims we have the cleanest voter rolls in the world, you know, put some examples on there where things could be improved. So that's and as far as the lawsuit, I will definitely be posting updates on that, as well as Fulton GOP and the state party there. There's a lot of folks posting. So just kind of follow us there. And I'm sure you'll be posting it as quick as things come out. So, you know, we'll find out here in a couple of days if they decide they want to pay $10,000 a day or if they want to follow the law. And if not, we'll be following the appeal process.
Well, that sounds great. And before I let you go, on behalf of, I know a lot of people in the audience are thinking, well, don't forget to say thank you for everything you've done, because you've been at this for 5 years or more now, right? And awful lot of work and an awful lot of sweat and toil to try to fix things in the state and also specifically in Fulton County. So on behalf of everybody, thank you for that work.
Thank you, Bill.
All right. We'll look forward to having you back soon, Jason. Thanks for being with us. All right. So, We have one more kind of surprise guest coming in here in the last few minutes. And as we get there, I want to remind folks that we had reported earlier in the week and last week that there was going to be a meeting of the RNC wherein they would elect a new chairman. And we asked folks to support Amy Kremer and her efforts to, one, hear from populists all across Georgia in listening town halls, but also to support her with letters and other documents to support the concerns that have come out so strongly since many of the, I'll call them troubling revelations have come out with regard to the state GOP. So to talk more about that and give us an update on what may be happening next, let me welcome in David Cross. David, thank you for being with us, my friend.
My pleasure, Bill. How are you tonight?
I am great. Boy, you get the voice. You must have an upgraded mic tonight. This sounds great.
Finally figured out the settings on the laptop, so we're good.
That's wonderful. So thank you for making time at the last minute. So you are our surprise guest for this evening, so thanks for making time. I know you've been working on something that's going to be acted on in the next 24, 48 hours. Can you take us through that, please?
Yeah, so Amy Kremer hopefully she delivered the documentation to Joe Gruters this past weekend. I'm concerned that maybe she didn't have that opportunity, and I haven't heard from her. So I can't rely on everybody else to do things for me. So I have put together the list. I printed out all the letters. I printed out all the petitions, and man, I got to tell you, it was way more than I thought. The petitions alone is 4 inches, of paper just in one binder. Wow. The letters is like another 3 inches of documentation. So he's getting a cover letter first, because I don't want to like carpet bomb him, with a huge package. But he's getting an initial package that says here's what the concerns are. here are some samples, you know, of the data that's coming. And I'm sending everything else under separate cover. But he's probably going to have a solid 10 or 12 pounds of paper that's going to be hitting his desk here pretty soon to show him just how concerned all of us are, you know, in Georgia. And I think that's really incumbent upon him to do something about this, particularly as we just saw, you know, Josh McCoon come out and say, rah, 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 we need the Public Service Commission to use, you know, paper ballots, but he wasn't willing to do that in our convention that we just had. So hopefully what we're going to see is some people saying, I see what's going on here. We need to do something about it.
Well, this should be interesting. Now, just to make sure folks recognize these names, Michael Whatley has been the chairman of the RNC up to this week. Yes. And yes, during this meeting, this, I guess they call it the, is it annual or seasonal meeting, wherein the members of the RNC and the, in our case, the three representatives from Georgia attend these meetings and take votes on various things. In this case, on Friday, they took a vote to bring in a new replacing chairman, and Joe Gruters, a senator from Florida, was voted into that position. So in his, you know, in his very first few days, he gets a gift basket from Georgia to illustrate and document the concerns that have been going on here. So we, appreciate the efforts in putting this together. Has anybody yet heard back from the previous communication from Michael Whatley? I believe one of the things that he had said was the earlier complaints issued just after the convention had gone to a dispute committee, if I recall his words correctly. Has anybody heard anything from such a committee?
Not a word. In fact, the last communication I got was on July 1st from the council, from chief counsel for the RNC. And it's a little bit disconcerting that, you know, here we are in, you know, nearly the tail end of August and nothing's happening. And unfortunately, it just seems like whether it's the Georgia GOP or the RNC, this predilection to entropy and to not do anything and to not upset the apple cart, and let's not make anybody upset, it boggles my mind. But that's apparently just the normal mode of how things are handled, is to ignore them. The same way that Josh McCoon is ignoring the whole thing with the Frost family right now and not sweeping them out, you know, or excising them like the cancer that they are in the Georgia Republican Party.
Mm-hmm. The Frost family being several members of them being owners or executives or both of First Liberty Building and Loan, the company that is now under investigation and by both the SEC and with the help of the FBI and the Secretary of State here in Georgia for a alleged Ponzi scheme amounting to what they think is $140 million, albeit I've seen some indications that they may be upping that number at some point. We don't know.
I think it's going to be significantly more. There's complaints in 38 states at this point right now. I wouldn't be surprised if it was $250 million at some point. But what boggles my mind and what really concerns me is that leadership at the highest levels in the Georgia GOP, including Josh McCoon, my concern is that people at the top receive compensation from the Frost family in order to send business, in order to send unsuspecting investors their way. And I could be totally wrong, but who on earth would possibly know, because Josh McCoon has climbed into a clamshell and pretends like this does not exist. And that seems to be where we're heading right now, because everybody's saying, oh, well, let's not pay attention to what's going on in the Frost family. Let's turn our direction over here to who's running for, you know, for governor or lieutenant governor or whatever else. So the people of Georgia, with my running for chairman, I think what's happened was Republicans in Georgia have awakened to the fact that we have corruption at the highest levels, and it's time to sweep it out of there. And that was the whole reason why I was running for chairman. There's a lot of my detractors out there, the Debbie Dooleys of the world, and the morons like that, that really believe that I was looking for, you know, for power and title. That's not what I'm about. I mean, Bill, you've known me for several years. I don't care about title, position, power, anything like that. What I care about is my country, and what I care about is running things ethically in the right way. And right now, to me, it seems like there's a lot of people at the upper echelon of the Republican Party of Georgia, unfortunately, at the very highest levels, that are ethically challenged.
Yeah, we've called out on, a number of occasions that when something troubling happens, when a state senator finds trafficking going on through Hartsfield Airport, when ICE raids a large corporate facility in Rome, Georgia, and hundreds of apparent illegals go running for the fence line, there is this deafening silence from legislators and from state officials, governor, lieutenant governor, and others say nothing about it. And it just seems to suggest that, you know, if you were a real leader, as most people expect, like Trump, the first guy to speak is the guy that's leading, because right, you have to talk about such things. And especially at this time, I mean, we're going into fourth quarter, year before midterm elections or next elections, and with a senator slot up for grabs that is probably super critical for the country, certainly for Georgia, you would think the last thing that an incoming chairman to the RNC would want to deal with is turmoil across the Republican constituency in Georgia. And unfortunately, if you look at the communications you see from people all over the state, that's what we appear to have. We have this confusion, distrust, constant questioning, and everybody trying to get down underneath what's really going on, as opposed to let's all, you know, kumbaya, let's go get behind something to make sure that we make sure the state one stays red and we get a better senator and all that kind of stuff. And yet there's this dramatic confusion because you don't know who to trust when nobody's talking. And right, I think that is a net thing for the incoming chairman, Mr. Gruters, to consider. We hope hear this.
One of the things I think is happening right now, Bill, is that the grassroots Republicans across the state, the people who really care deeply about this country the way that I do, they are screaming, begging for quality leadership. People are so tired of seeing these conflicts of interest, and somebody covers up for somebody else because of money that was paid, or somebody who knows something, and mm-hmm, instead of doing what's right. I mean, I'm an Eagle Scout, been an Eagle Scout for a long time. I've carried those values with me my entire life, and everything I do has to do with truth and honesty and being above board and telling people that the way it is. And we're in a situation right now where the Georgia Republican Party needs to eat a gigantic crap sandwich and make a spectacle of it to drive out the Democrats that are going to come for us, and they're going to attack our leadership for having done nothing. And in fact, one of the things that just happened in the Senate District 21, there was this, we just had a special election, and it was a disaster. It was an utter disaster because we have no leadership of the Georgia Republican Party. Mm. The leading Democrat got 40% of the vote. The nearest Republican got 17%. So what's going to happen is we're going to have a runoff next month where you're going to have a really strong Democrat running against a really weak Republican. And I'm concerned that we're going to lose that seat, even though it is, it's the Kennesaw, Cobb area. That's always been, staunch Republican. I'm concerned they're going to eat our lunch. And it all has to do with the fact that Josh McCown is not leading. You cannot lead from behind.
Right. Didn't we just have a couple months ago, we lost a couple of key potential races because there was lack of support for Republican candidates in the Cobb districts, as I recall. It was, I think, county level or local level races.
Yeah, it was a comp commissioner's race. There was no coordination. There was nothing that happened. I mean, I had one of the candidates, you know, reached out to me, for resources and, getting contact information and names and email addresses and phone numbers and things like that. Things that should be handed to him on a silver platter from the Georgia Republican Party. And thank you, thank you, thank you for running. He gets radio silence. You know, so it's me and other activists like me that step up to the plate to be able to offer those resources. And there's so much more that can be done. And we're just in a situation right now where it's kind of sad. But I will tell you this: if we don't get something that happens with Joe Gruters here pretty soon, then what you're going to see is you're going to see black hat wearing Georgia Republicans. You know, they're going to be wearing their no quarters flags, you know, on those black hats that I created. And this is going to become about winning with the very best Republicans that we can possibly find. It's not going to be about going with whoever the governor has pre-selected or somebody else has pre-selected. It's going to be about making the hard choices and going with our strongest, most forceful America First Republicans.
Yeah. Maybe, let me underscore one point about even local leadership that you touched on. That is, when you don't get the support that you need, even we'll use Cobb County as the example. Perhaps the net problem might be because you bring in and allow, folks to bring in an unknown leader from potentially not even a legal resident of Georgia, or at least, registered with primary residence out of the state. And all of a sudden they're in leadership, and yet nothing happens in their county during a critical time. I wonder what causes this.
I'm sorry. And Bill, what's happening over there right now is you have an inexperienced leader. You know, she's doing her best. I'm sure she, I've had conversations with her. I know she's a nice person, but she's doing the bidding of Sally Grubbs, who was an ineffective failure pile delivered in a sadness bowl in Cobb County. It's just utterly terrible what's happening to Cobb County. And there's no proactive plan. Everything is reactive. There's no proactive plan to go out and talk with developers like in Gwinnett County or Cobb County. They're putting up these places and asking them, particularly ones that share our values, to set aside a small amount of money from their project to help fund the party so that you can do community outreach. Nobody even thinks of those things. I mean, I'm doing that in Gwinnett County right now, talking with developers. Nobody's doing that in Cobb County. It's all reaction. And if all you're doing is reacting, you're going to be mowed down on the battlefield.
Yeah. Well, the experience since the state convention has not been a positive one. So we hope that what you're doing with getting information and documents to Gruters, and hopefully with him newly at the helm, he'll have the chance to look and pick priorities. And we hope that Georgia becomes one of those top priorities that those of us here feel like it should be. So,
well, Joe Gruters' job is to protect the franchise of the Republican Party right now. And the Georgia Republican Party, if this was McDonald's and the Georgia and the Republican Party, the RNC, was Mother McDonald's, like home, headquarters, the Georgia Republican Party is a rogue franchise that's out here that's selling corn dogs and sloppy joes, and they're doing a terrible job doing it. And Gruters has to protect the franchise.
Yeah. David, thank you so much for making time on short notice to be here with us tonight. I think this was very important, and good luck. I would like you to keep us informed as to what happens following this package or shipment, maybe we'll call it, going to Joe Gruters. So thanks again.
It's a huge drop. My pleasure. Thank you.
Stick with us while we sign off, and thanks for being here. So Todd Wood will be back in seat in the coming, 24, 48 hours. We will be back on Sunday at 2 p.m., and I'm sure we are going to have plenty to talk about if things continue at the pace nationally that they have, and hopefully we'll have some things to talk about right here in Georgia, as we almost always do. So thank you for being with us, and we will see you next time.